Live from Dubai. This is the Drive Home with Rebecca Ricketts.
Good afternoon and welcome to Monday's Drive Home show with me, Rebecca Ricketts. Coming to you from Dubai, today I will be joined by Emily Fair, an international teacher who has utilised her time teaching overseas to travel to nearly 60 different places. As the world is starting to open up, join us for our discussion about teaching abroad and all the opportunities it brings to explore.
Live from Dubai, this is the Drive Home with Rebecca Ricketts. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TT Radio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's show, live from Dubai, with me, Rebecca. It's been an exciting few days for expats with the recent news that travelling is finally about to get a little bit easier, meaning that we can finally visit home and start venturing even further afield. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by Emily Fair, a fellow international teacher, to discuss her experiences and any advice for anyone who is looking for some ventures further afield. So it's been quite a hectic couple of weeks since I was last with you on Teachers Talk Radio. Anyone who has listened to the show before knows that I am constantly waxing lyrical about living in Dubai and all of the amazing things about this fantastic city. The latest thing that I am adding to my list is moving house, and that's never a sentence I thought I would say. However, this weekend I've moved to a completely new part of the city, and moving house has never been easier. In 5 hours, I had movers packing up my old place. I felt like a complete spare part, to be honest. I didn't really know what to do, and every time I tried to do something, I felt like it was getting in the way. So in 5 hours, they managed to pack up my old place, drive to the new, unpacked everything, and honestly, my new apartment, it looks like I've lived here forever. We know what the start of term is like, we know what the start of the school year is like, and I was dreading combining a new job and moving house. But actually now what I am getting over is just how easy it was, and actually how easy it has been, because even when I was in the UK, I always kind of made sure that I was a good 30 away from working. I see conversations like this on Twitter all the time. I've seen the dream job, but it means a commute of 40 minutes. That never used to bother me. In fact, I kind of welcomed it, being far away from the school catchment area. But here, the schools are very different. Students don't have catchment areas. They kind of travel in from all over the city. So I don't feel like we're going to bump into any kids when I'm popping to get a pint of milk on a Friday morning. And it's just amazing being able to walk to work. I've never done this in the entirety of my career. And already the fact that I can have an extra half an hour in bed, or it takes me 5 minutes to get home at the end of the day. We talk about work-life balance and we talk about well-being a lot on this show. And I can tell you right now that is massively going to help mine 100%. So as we know, starting a new job in a new school is never easy, but I am here 4 weeks in and I am happy to say that I am finally feeling settled and I am loving my new teaching environment. Tomorrow, in a bid, I'm trying here now, I talk a lot about reading, and in the next few weeks I've got some really exciting guests coming up talking about reading, creating reading cultures, engaging reticent readers. But I'm going on a slightly different angle for myself as well for the first time. And I'm really looking at building a focus on oracy. I teach students from all over the world. We've got a massive EAL culture at my new school. And for me, talk for writing and looking at ways that we can actually communicate is something that's so, so important when we are teaching English as a second language. So I'm holding my first extracurricular club tomorrow. And I'm building teams to enter the World Scholars Cup competition. There are a couple of rounds being held in Dubai. And again, with the excitement of all these things that are opening up for the first time again, the fact that students are actually going to be able to compete face-to-face and join in is just so, so, so exciting. So the World Scholars Cup, for anybody that doesn't know about it, it encourages students of all abilities. And again, that is something that really appeals to me. I don't really like this whole selective nature of clubs, and I don't like the selective nature of competition. And the World Scholars Cup really encourages students of all abilities. So they will be there collaborating, working in teams of three, looking at debate, creative writing, quizzing. And in November, we'll have a full weekend, the Friday and the Saturday, competing against students from other schools all across the UAE. I'm really excited about this because the amount of students who've actually wanted to participate has really, really taken my breath away. They're very keen, they're very excited. And I'm really looking forward to building a culture of debate, regardless of ability, across the school. But like I said, this is a completely new thing for me. I've been doing a lot of research, I've been doing a lot of work towards this. So if anybody is listening in and they have any tips about how to conduct successful debates, how to get yourself really successful debate teams, please post them in the chat or call in, because it would be lovely to have some advice. So in my new school today, saw another first in my teaching career. I covered a PE lesson. My form group and my teaching classes were really surprised this morning to see me out of my usual teacher attire. My uniform of heels and dresses was very much replaced with my PE kit. I was asked yesterday if I wouldn't mind covering a PE lesson, and I did think, what, you really must be scraping the barrel here. What are you letting yourselves in for, letting me teach a PE lesson? And when I found out it was netball, I also had to think, hang on a minute, I haven't actually played netball, let alone even talked about netball for, well, since I was in year 11, so that is a really long time ago. I absolutely loved it. I was really thrown by the idea of it, but actually when I started, I absolutely loved it. Once I was on the court this morning, I felt like all the rules and my competitive edge just completely took over. So if anyone is looking for more PE cover, I'm definitely your girl. I absolutely loved it. And the other thing I really enjoyed was being thrust out of my comfort zone. I absolutely love seeing students outside of the English classroom. I love being able to see them in different contexts. I'm always the person that signs up for trips. I think some of the most rewarding things is seeing students. For me, the best ones was always on the school ski trip, because you get to see students in a completely different light. And covering a PE lesson today, again, you know, we had a really great time and I got to see them and build relationships, which is so important in those first few weeks of teaching. So yes, I did enjoy being thrown out of my comfort zone and did miss my AC-filled classroom for the hour. But even though I did sound like Ross from Friends on more than one occasion, I did absolutely love it. So anyway, back to today's show. So as I mentioned at the start, vaccinated expats in the UAE have finally heard the news that we have been waiting for, and we are going to be able to return back to the UK without the need to quarantine. As you can imagine, people are absolutely thrilled. It's all over social media. People are celebrating. I mean, for some people, this is the first time they're going to be able to have gone home in over 2 years. I managed to sneak back just at Christmas before everything went into lockdown. And after a year and a half of being away from my family, that was more than long enough. I don't have any travel booked for myself yet, although I can see that changing very, very quickly after today's conversation with Emily. However, I'm really excited because I can finally count down and really, really prepare for my mum, who is going to visit in October half term. I feel like she booked the flights for this about 7 years ago. We've changed them so many times, but finally can confirm that she is going to be here, even though I've been so worried so many times it's not actually going to happen. So if anybody in Dubai is listening, please could you send me some recommendations of things to do when my mum is visiting. We're going to do a brunch, we're going to go out for some dinners, we're going to do a pool day, but if anybody has any really good suggestions, please let me know by texting in. So today's show, we are focusing on international teaching and we are focusing on travel. So joining me in a minute is Emily Fair, an international teacher with a passion for travel. And I am thinking that after today's conversation, my travel wish list will be even bigger. And I'll probably be heading straight to Skyscanner to book my next trip. So I'm just going to play the adverts and then Emily will be joining me after this.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has three DfE validated programs to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Do you struggle with people pleasing? Is it a constant battle managing different and difficult personalities? Why not inspire, challenge, and empower your team through the MAL CPD Essential Coaching Skills for School Leaders course, or gain practical skills to become a strong and compassionate leader through the Assertive Leadership and the Emotionally Intelligent Leader courses. All MAL CPD courses are accredited by the Institute of Leadership and Management. Find out more at www.malcpd.com. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful, and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Okay, so welcome back to Monday's Drive Home Show with me, Rebecca Ricketts. I'm going to be joined by Emily Fair, as I've mentioned already. Emily is an international teacher like myself, living in Dubai. And whilst Emily has been working and living abroad, has racked up visits to almost 60 different places. So Emily, hopefully you can hear me now. Hi, Em.
Hi. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, can hear you absolutely fine. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation, but I don't think my bank balance is. So for everybody who is listening, could you please tell us about yourself and your career to date?
So I've been a teacher This is my third year in Dubai. I did 5 years in Kuwait and 3 years in the UK. So 11th year. I didn't actually go into teaching from the off. I'm a physics teacher, but I started down a path of history. So I started an ancient history and archaeology degree. Didn't change my mind. Sorry if you can hear jingling. It's the cat's just hassling me.
Okay.
She's just in the background. So I started doing that as a degree and then changed my mind, decided to study physics and then decided to become a physics teacher. So yeah, taught in North Wales for 2 years, a year in London, and then, as I said, made the move abroad, 5 years in Kuwait, and now this is my third year in Dubai.
Okay, fantastic. So what actually attracted you into international teaching?
I do think it was because I wanted to travel. I think I always had that in my head, that teaching was kind of like an easy way to get abroad and to work abroad. So it's something that you can definitely do everywhere. And I definitely picked the right degree with physics because that's always made it easy to get a job teaching. I always had it in mind that I wanted to see the world, and teaching was a really, really easy way to do that. On the agenda.
Oh, sorry. Well, I was just going to say, do you think that actually international teaching makes it easier than maybe teaching in the UK? Because I've certainly done a lot more travelling since I've lived overseas.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like the obvious answer, but this might not be true. This is true if you move to the Middle East. But I do think it's more affordable. You tend to have more disposable income because teacher packages abroad tend to include housing and return flights to your home country. So I definitely think that financially it's been a lot easier, especially when I was in Kuwait. It's, you know, it just had sort of crazy money and you'd always have money left over and it'd just be like, right, where are we going next kind of thing. So definitely that. And then I guess you meet more like-minded people because you meet people who have taken that jump and are happy to leave their home country and go and see a bit more of the world. So I've, you know, traveling and living abroad, it's, you're always bumping into people that are just like, right, where are we going next kind of thing.
So do you think you've made quite a lot of friends by, you know, choosing to start traveling and broaden those horizons?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely made friends that way. But I sometimes it's strange, really, because it, I mean, now in the beginning, a long time ago, you used to travel, you used to meet people and you'd have these amazing experiences and make these amazing memories. And that would be it. You'd kind of, you know, you'd walk away. You wouldn't, it wasn't Facebook or, you know, people didn't feel that they had to become friends on Facebook or Instagram or anything and keep in touch. And in some ways, I quite liked that because it meant that it was just that memory and just that time and that place. And of course, I mean, you make friends with people on Facebook nowadays or social media, and you may never even speak to them again, and that's fair enough. But yeah, I've definitely made friends along the way, and it is easier to stay in touch with people nowadays. So there is that side to it. It's nice to know that you've kind of got like a bed somewhere like far away. If you ever need to go and stay like stateside or anything, there's somebody there that will put you up. So it's good for that as well.
I never even thought about that, to be honest. That is a really good point.
That's what you're doing while you're teaching abroad. You're just collecting beds all over the world.
That definitely sounds like an advert for international teaching.
Yeah.
So you've kind of touched on it already. And anybody that's listened to the show and has listened to the show before knows that I do talk about all the great things about teaching in the Middle East. But why did you choose the Middle East as your teaching destination? You mentioned Kuwait and then Dubai.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard, like, it's so strange, like, thinking back nearly eight years ago and, like, trying to remember what I was thinking and feeling at the time. It sounds terrible, but I'd heard of Kuwait, and I'd actually, my uncle used to be in the Navy, and he was based out in Saudi Arabia for a while, and I'd actually been there and visited, you know, the Middle East that way. It's obviously very different there, but it's, so I was aware of countries in the region, and you know, my auntie and my cousins had lived in Saudi for a while, so I, although Kuwait and obviously the UAE are much more relaxed than Saudi, I kind of got an insight into the expat culture in this region, and they'd always had like fantastic holidays and things. And the money in Kuwait, that's where I went first. It was, you know, very attractive. And I just, it sounds bad, but I literally just looked on Tez and was just like, oh, there's a school in Kuwait, and just applied. I didn't really go on any forums. I didn't do any like deep research. I just kind of had this feeling that it was all going to be okay. And luckily it was. I don't necessarily recommend that as an approach. I think it is good to do research and it's good to talk to people. And I do actually see on a lot of the Facebook groups that we have here, that people are, you know, do message and say, oh, I'm thinking of moving out. Like, you know, what do people think? So I do think that's more sensible. But luckily it worked out for me, just kind of almost like sticking a pin in a map and just going for it.
I think our experiences sound really, really similar. And I think what you just said, when you're like, I think it's bad that I just went on test, I'm like, no, that's not bad, it's brave. That's what I tell myself. Turning 30 and having some sort of like midlife crisis, I know I'll be by a place I've never been to before. But it's working out. It's definitely working out.
Exactly.
The experiences that you're having, that you're going to share with everybody today. I mean, Absolutely, yeah. And incredible.
I mean, you say it's brave, and it is brave, but you meet so many people that are in the same situation or doing similar things, and everyone's so wonderful and so lovely that you very quickly feel supported. I do remember my first night in Kuwait, and I couldn't sleep. And I wasn't having a whole, like, did I do the right thing moment, but I just couldn't sleep. I think it was all just so unfamiliar, and you kind of like jostled about, like when you arrive, they, you know, people come to meet you and they take you here and then they take you there and they show you this, and then all of a sudden you're just left in this strange apartment by yourself. It's very quiet, and you just, you know, it's just, that's when it all kind of hits you, kind of thing. And yeah, and I do remember just feeling a bit sort of lonely in that moment, I think, and you know, feeling the weight of the fact that my family was like half a world away. And but yeah, I never had second thoughts or anything. You just have to bear in mind that you will have moments like that, but that it's totally worth it.
I think that's really important to remember. Everything you're describing, I remember those feelings well. I mean, it's 3 years ago now for me, and I'm just, you know, looking at starting this new job and thinking, oh, I'm just so glad I'm not completely starting from scratch all over again. Because it is so intense, isn't it, those first few weeks. But like you say, the fact that people remember being in the same boat or are in the same boat when you're going through it, there's just something about the community, about teaching internationally, that just makes it so much easier, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a quality that people who are willing to do that have. And it kind of unites you all, and you still get obviously all types of personalities and all different people, but you all have that in common, that you were willing to be brave and you were willing to take that risk and take that chance on doing something different. And I do think that kind of pulls you together when you need it.
Definitely, because I think, again, it's that sense of mutual understanding, isn't it? I'm just thinking that we're talking about the first time you and I ever met, and it was at a brunch, and it was just, we're mutual friends, and we just hit it off, and that was
Yeah, any person you meet at a brunch is always going to be a good friend.
Yes, friends for life. So, thinking back to travel in general, has that always been a big priority for you, you know, like growing up and what have you? Has travel always been a big focus for you?
It's always been a big desire. We didn't have a great deal of money growing up, so our sort of holidays were restricted to, like, we grew up in North Wales, so it was like Rhyl and Tawyn in a caravan, a rainy week in a caravan. And so I didn't actually go abroad for the first time until I was 16, I think, and I went to France. Mm-hmm. And I just any kind of life or situation that was away from home and different from home, I was always just drawn to that. Not because I loved my family home and I loved my upbringing, but it was exciting, and it gave me this sense of adventure. And I think that's always sort of drawn me and always made me want to go out and explore. And as I said, that's in part one of the reasons why I became a teacher, because although I loved my subject and I loved, you know, sharing that passion with students, that's what we always have to say, isn't it? I love sharing my passion with students. But I mean, that is true. I do enjoy talking about my subject with students. But it was that sort of chance to take me, you know, overseas and far and wide, that kind of drew me to teaching. And yeah, it's always been there, bubbling away, but like beneath the surface, less so I have to say in recent years, especially obviously with how difficult it is to travel at the moment. But yeah, when I lived in Kuwait, there was never a holiday where I wasn't going somewhere new. It was like a point of pride that it had to be a brand new country. And so I have always had that in me, I think.
I was very similar when I first moved to Dubai, because, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I was very much, I'll do 2 years. And while I do 2 years, I'll go and see everything that I can go and see, and do everything I can go and do. But I think for me, the one thing I have actually enjoyed is, because we've been fairly grounded, is exploring a lot more of the UAE, because I mean the place is incredible, yeah. isn't it? Once you get away from the big city, there's some really, really phenomenal, beautiful places.
Yeah, 100%. And like you say, because we've in some ways been sort of restricted in our international travel recently, it's made us, it does make you look around more at home, doesn't it? And like you say, yeah, we've, you know, we stayed in Dubai last summer and had some great experiences here. So definitely.
I think that's the thing I always have to remember sometimes, you know, people do come here on holiday and I never ever want to take that for granted that it's now our home. And when I'm like, oh, yeah. why? It's like, oh gosh, right, okay, you know, first world problems.
No, it's funny. I know when you're in the, like in hotels and you're just there to do brunch or whatever and you see people with all their suitcases and like the sun hats and stuff and you're just like, ah, oh, you just come here for a trip. But I live here.
It is one of those moments that you think, oh my gosh, I actually do live here.
I actually live here, yeah. Yeah. It's cool. You were saying about your mum coming to visit. It's really nice when my fiance's mum and his brother came out in our first year here, and we had some friends from back home come as well. And one of my friends came over from Kuwait, and it was really nice seeing Dubai through the eyes of like tourists, because they get like, you know, when I was living in Kuwait, I used to come over nearly every other weekend to Dubai. Mm-hmm. So you get used to the skyline and the, you know, the big buildings and the lavish brunches and stuff. You kind of get used to that, but it's really nice seeing it through the eyes of somebody that's not been here before. And yeah, you kind of get to relive all that again.
I 100% agree. And if I've not been traveling pre-COVID, I'd have somebody visiting. And you're right, I absolutely love it and being able to show people all these incredible things. And I don't think you can ever get blasé about it when you're showing them to other people. So I'm so excited to have my mum here. And it's that horrible thing though, of like pressure. I'm like curating the perfect list of things to do. And it's like, that cool day, will that be good? That dinner, that restaurant? Because you just want them to see it how we see it and enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you've got to like take into account people's, because like I know my mum's not super keen on coming out because she doesn't like the heat, but I know that she wouldn't be interested in brunches. So it's finding what they like as well. And I'd be like, no, but the brunches are amazing.
Oh, my mum keeps saying, she's like, oh, I just can't wait to have a night in your new apartment. I'm like, no, mum.
That's not on the tour.
That's not what you're here for. No, I've got the full tourist extravaganza on its way for you. So you've travelled to nearly 60. Now, is it 60 countries or 60 places?
Countries.
That's insane, Emily. That is absolutely incredible. So travelling to nearly 60 countries, how has teaching internationally helped you to do this?
Well, I mean, like I say, it's placed me in the Middle East, which is kind of a really good hub. It's very easy to get to places from here. It's given me the disposable income to spend on travel. The first year I was in Kuwait, I did like a 5.5 week, I think it was, 5 or 6 week tour of Africa, including climbing Kilimanjaro.
Wow.
And it was just like, I was just like, ah, I just want to book like the most amazing trip ever and just like, just, you know, spend all this money that I've just made all this year. And you kind of, you don't feel guilty either. I mean, I did a little bit actually, because I didn't get to spend that much time at home that summer, but that's a separate issue. Because you've been away from, you know, it's not all roses and rainbows. It's like, it's hard being away from your home country. It's hard. You know, it's like you said, it's brave and it takes courage. And there are times when you're lonely and there's times when you really, really, really miss home. So it's, you know, you don't feel guilty rewarding yourself with these sort of amazing holidays. You kind of feel like you deserve that. And especially being a teacher as well, where I always feel like we definitely deserve our holidays. So it's having that time as well. We tend to get longer holidays, having the disposable income. being in the right place for travel. And then, like I said before, meeting people that are willing to do those things with you. It's been great.
I think that thing that you've just said is something really important, and I want to flag it, is about not feeling guilty. It's one of those things this summer, you know, I could have gone home, I could have spent, like you went home, and I could have spent 10 days in another country or whatever, or 10 days in a hotel, and I thought, I'm not going to get any pleasure out of that. I'd rather just dig my heels in. Yeah. And there's that expectation, that weight of expectation that we're always going to go home. And you're right, sometimes you've just got to put yourself first a little bit and not feel guilty. And I think that's a really important point that you've just made there, in making sure that you are putting yourself first in whatever the circumstance is.
It is, yeah, it is. It's a balance. And to be honest, when I lived in Kuwait, it never felt like my home. I always felt like I went to Kuwait to work, and then holiday times, I travelled and I came home to see family. And that's not because I didn't like Kuwait or I didn't have amazing friends there. I really, really did. I think some of it was to do with the fact that I was mainly single when I was there. And also because I think it wasn't a place that I ever had or I ever saw myself long term. Mm-hmm. So I used to feel the guilt more strongly, because if I was leaving Kuwait but I wasn't going back to the UK, I felt bad, because I felt like that's what I should be doing. I always felt that I should go home and see my family. Whereas since moving to Dubai, I don't feel that as much anymore now, because this feels like more like it's my home. And I mean, that doesn't mean that I don't miss my family terribly. I honestly really do. And COVID times were hard times. But I don't feel like I owe it to them to always go home. I feel like this is my home now, and I will go when the time's right and as often as we can. But I do think that's made a difference. And I also think, because I don't think anybody from my family wanted to visit me in Kuwait. Mm-hmm. But I know that some members of my family wouldn't mind a holiday in Dubai. So not my mum, but other members of my family would happily come here. So now it's like, well, you could come to me as well now. It's a balance, and you've got to be kind to yourself. You know, you, like you said, you've got to do what's right for you as well, because it's your life, isn't it? And you've got to enjoy yourself, and you've got to be able to look back and think that you did what it was that made you happy. So
definitely, I think that point about making a place your home, like Dubai is 100% unashamedly my home now. Like, this is where I live, this is where my life is. And I can't really imagine ever being back in the UK. And I've said that a lot on this show when I start talking about international teaching. And I think, you know, that's a good thing, because it means I'm invested, and it means, you know, this is where my friends are, Dubai family is, you know. And yeah. I think for family who haven't been out here or have only ever really experienced me living in the UK, they find that really difficult to actually imagine that I'm not going to come back, or I've got no intention of coming back anytime soon. Yeah. And I think it's that, isn't it? And it's just, you know, just owning it a little bit and being true to the decision that you've made. What were you going to say?
And what it is that you want to do with your life.
Oh, I've just got a question in the chat. Thank you to Dave. He says, if you are a UK-based teacher and considering applying for an international post, but really on the fence whether it's the correct thing to do or not, what is the single largest thing that helped you make the decision to go and work overseas, aside from the salary?
I've obviously been labouring that point far too much.
No, I think I'm going to labour that
point. It's not all about the money. For me, definitely, it was the opportunity to travel and to see new places, and not just that actually, but actually live in a different country. Because as much as it's wonderful to travel, and you know, I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that, it's totally different going on holiday somewhere than it is living somewhere. And I mean, sometimes we joke in Dubai about like how it's sometimes it feels like you're on holiday kind of thing, but not when you get deep into term time and you just, you know, you're working and you're up to your eyeballs in marking and there's deadlines and things. It feels like normal life then. I wanted to experience normal life, but in a different country. So that was definitely a big thing for me. As I said earlier, I just think it's people who choose to do it have this quality in them. They have these characteristics, and it's like an itch that you have to scratch. And that's, well, I mean, I'm saying that from my personal experience. I don't know if it was the same for you, Beck, but I knew I would never have been quiet inside myself if I hadn't have gone to do it. And maybe I could have tried it and it was rubbish and it wasn't for me, but I haven't gone home yet, so.
Well, I think that's it. I think the single largest thing for me was knowing that it wasn't forever. You know, if I didn't like it, I could go home. I think particularly our experience of living in the Middle East has made the world feel so much smaller. I know that if I needed to, especially now that I can, getting home, I'd be there in a day, you know? I could book a flight and I could be on that flight and I could be home the same day. I just think for me and for anybody that's thinking about travelling and teaching abroad is the world isn't as big as it perhaps feels when you sat in North Yorkshire, having lived in the same place pretty much your whole life. And I think, like you, Em, I was very similar. It was an itch that needed to be scratched, one that I didn't even know I had for a long time. Yeah. But definitely, I think the largest motivator was experiencing new cultures, having the opportunity to travel, I think, but most importantly, knowing that it didn't have to be permanent if I didn't like it. You know, I just get on the plane and go back home again, but at least I've given it a try.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, it's the same, you know, I lived in Kuwait for 5 years and now I'm here. It was the same when I moved to Dubai from Kuwait. I already knew that I was comfortable teaching abroad, but I didn't know that I was going to necessarily like Dubai that much. But, you know, you just think, well, contracts tend to be a year or two. If it doesn't work out, well, then I'll go somewhere else. I don't think everybody has that flexibility, to be fair. So I don't want to sound too like blasé about that. It's you know, some people have roots and reasons why they, you know, they can't just up and leave. Mm-hmm. And think, oh well, I'll just, you know, do it for a year or two and then, you know, like everything will just be the same when I get back. So it is a serious decision, but like I say, if it's something that's inside you that you think this part of me is never gonna shut up until I just go and do it and try it, then I think it's worth at least looking into.
Definitely. And I mean, I did so much research, and I suppose another factor, knowing that I could make the decision, is that I could take my cat with me. So once that factor being cleared up, that was it. There was no stopping
that
me.
That was it. There was no other hurdles. That was the only one.
Right, I'm just going to play the news and we will be back in a couple of minutes. Emily, thank you so much for your discussion so far, and we will be back after this.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn. A report for BBC News suggests that virtual parents' evenings were one of the few successes to come out of lockdown. Parents could avoid queues to speak to teachers, appointments were punctual, and separated parents could both attend more easily. Educators seemed to like the system too, with the then Education Recovery Commissioner, Sir Kevin Collins, saying in May that particular aspect of school life would never be the same again. Zoom for parents' evenings is much better than trying to find a car parking space on a wet Tuesday and waiting your turn, he said. Educational Technology Advisor and London Borough of Havering Senior Inspector, Dave Smith, agrees that online versions are here to stay. Online parent and carer meetings have proved very successful in schools, he says. colleagues have outlined benefits for parents and carers who can dial into meetings from wherever they are when previously they might not have been able to attend a meeting due to work or other commitments, has allowed better engagement and attendance rates. Scotland's biggest teachers' union has hit out at the resumption of school inspections during disruption. The EIS was reported in the Edinburgh Evening News as saying the return of scrutiny activity inspections, announced on the Education Scotland website, would undermine any progress to securing the well-being of pupils and staff. School inspections were paused in March of last year to allow schools to focus on education recovery. EIS General Secretary Larry Flanagan said, "The move showed that Education Scotland and the Scottish Government were deeply out of touch with the reality that schools are currently facing amidst record levels of pupil and teacher COVID-related absence, and therefore significant ongoing disruption." According to Mr. Flanagan, school inspectors were of limited value pre-pandemic in terms of supporting learning and teaching, and to reintroduce them now is somewhat nonsensical. A spokesman for Education Scotland said, "As has been the case since the beginning of the pandemic, HMIE are committed to supporting recovery across the education system and learn from practitioners about the work underway to address the impact of COVID-19. This has been your daily education news briefing.
Hello and welcome back to Monday's Drive Home Show with me, Rebecca Ricketts, live from Dubai. Where I'm joined today by Emily Fair, a fellow international teacher here in Dubai, talking about her experiences of travelling to over 60 different countries. Hi Emily, welcome back to the show and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I just want to confirm again, because I was a bit like, is it 60 countries or places? I mean, this is 60 countries.
Really 60, not quite 60, but really before I'm 60.
You need to have one of those maps, I think, where you can actually put all your pins in.
I do actually have those. I think my cousin bought me like a scratch-off one, and I've never got round to putting it up. Again, the whole, like, I always feel like I'm going somewhere in a year or two, so maybe it's time. I've just moved recently, so maybe this is the house to put that map up on the wall and start scratching.
I think that's a really good idea, because it's going to take you a while to take off all the coins.
Probably go through a few coins.
Right, I really now want to switch the conversation and start thinking about some of the experiences that you've had when you've been travelling. So, tell me some. I mean, you've already mentioned Mount Kilimanjaro. I mean, that's on my bucket list. South Africa, Kenya, all of those kind of places. Anywhere I can see a giraffe in the wild, I can die happy. What's one or some of the best experiences that you've ever had when travelling?
I think there's definitely some countries that have stood out in terms of the landscape and like the awesome things that I've seen there. I would say Iceland's probably my favourite country to have visited. I've got this like weird thing about light and like the perfect light in the sky, and the light in Iceland's just amazing. It's always not too bright. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is. Mm-hmm. And it just makes everything kind of glow. And then of course you could see the northern lights there. So the physics teacher in me gets a big kick out of that. And there's just some wonderful, just incredible jaw-dropping sights that you can see there. The other place that's made my jaw drop, quite literally, is Ethiopia.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's not an easy place to travel. You've got to kind of be prepared to be hot and sweaty and dirty and not have a cold drink for days. Which I didn't know would happen before I went, so to be fair, just kind of surprised me with that. But there's a volcano that they have there called Erta Alley, and it's in the north, and you can kind of hike up it and you stay in this little stone village, which is abandoned. It's just like little stone huts, and they just kind of like give you a sleeping bag and say, or just lie down there for a few hours. And there was a few mice like running in and stuff. So yeah, not like luxury, not Dubai, definitely not Dubai. And then they wake you up after a few hours, and you kind of go to this crater, and you go over this ridge, and you walk along, and all the floor is like black, and it like crackles under your feet, like it's shattering almost.
Uh-huh.
And then you get up to this little ridge, and on the other side of it is this huge lake of lava. And I can't even begin to describe how amazing it was to see. It's like it's never still. It kind of like crusts over, and then like the gas bursts through, and you get this jet of fire, and it was like lava waves like lapping against the edge of the crater. And I could have stayed there for what felt like the rest of my life. I didn't want to leave. It was just amazing, and it was well worth the days of sleepless nights and not really having anywhere clean to eat or sleep or anything like that. 100% worth it. So in terms of sights and things, I mean, Kilimanjaro, obviously amazing. Anywhere you can go where you can really see the sky is incredible. Animals, I love all the animals. I've always tried to go on safari and things like that. But in terms of like takeaways, I think one of the big things about the further you go from your own culture and the more that you see, you kind of realize that despite all of our amazing differences, and they are amazing, everybody's just the same. All humans are just people. Like, you see families that are just, you know, trying to make ends meet. You see, like, parents that obviously love their kids. You see kids playing and you know, making friends and having arguments. And you just see that everywhere you go. Everybody's the same. And you can make eye contact with a fellow traveller that you know, don't even speak the same language as. And you know that you're both seeing the same things. And that it's that, to me, is the biggest takeaway from travel, that it's the further you go, the kind of closer you feel to all of humanity. It sounds really corny, I know.
I love this idea about these shared experiences. You know, I think that is definitely something that you can never really take away from. And like you were saying, you may see people, you said something earlier in the show, you might see people that you may never see again, but, you know, ultimately you've shared that experience with somebody, and that's phenomenal, and you can never really take away from that.
Yeah. It's nice to know that it doesn't matter who you are and where you grow up, that we're all just essentially the same. I think that's an important lesson to learn, and I wish sometimes that more people had those experiences and saw just how similar we all are, really.
I think it would definitely create a lot more of an interesting discussion and debate around the world. Something that you were saying earlier about sharing your passions for teaching, I just think about these experiences that you talk about. How often do you bring your experiences back into the classroom when you're talking with your students?
That's a really good question. I mean, I have actually been to CERN in Switzerland / France, on the Swiss-France border, and I've ran a couple of school trips there, but I've been to see the Large Hadron Collider, was there just before it was finished being built, so went down and saw it kind of being put together, been in the tunnels and stuff. And I mean, it's not something we teach in GCSE physics, but we do teach A-level physics. So I've always been able to, you know, I've shown like photographs from being there and things like that. If it's relevant, then yeah, I don't like, I mean, I've seen some teachers that, you know, just because they've been skydiving, that there's a skydiving video in the lesson, whether it's relevant or not. So I don't tend to do that. But if it's relevant, I think, you know, it's really important. Like, kids learn things better when they're making links with real life. And I'm sure it's the same in your subjects as well. So as often as you can, you try to make those links for them. And if it's something that's important to you or some experience that you've had, they can sense that it's genuine and it's not just a manufactured one where you're trying to make something up to try and help them understand. If it's something real, then they tend to latch onto that more. So yeah, if it fits, then definitely.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm teaching a text that's set in World War One at the moment to Year 7. And I've never taught anything like this since I've been in the UAE. And it occurred to me, they've got absolutely no cultural understanding of what World War One is. These kids, even the ones who are British expat children, have no idea. And when we were talking about it and I was setting context the other day, I realised I had to really go back to the beginning and talk about it. And we were reading a section of the novel and they're in a trench. And they had no idea what a trench was. So in the lesson, it all got abandoned. I mean, I've completely sidetracked now. But we ended up creating trenches in the classroom because I need socially distanced, I'm going to say, because I needed them to understand what it actually meant, you know, to be in this kind of situation. And then mine was a school trip experience. I'd gone on a history trip and done the battlefields. And I was telling them about it and they were so fascinated that the next day I put a load of photographs of it on the PowerPoint just to get them to understand, because they had absolutely no concept whatsoever. And we've ended up spending about 3 lessons just because it's so important that they actually understand the background. So I know what you're saying. It's about those experiences. That one, it was a school.
It's about bringing it home to them, because some of the things we teach, you know, especially in physics and science, can be quite abstract. And something like that, like you say, if they don't have anything, they don't have any idea or any relatable experience, which, you know, thankfully they don't have a relatable experience of World War One. But how then do you get them to appreciate what that would have been like and the importance of it? And yeah, like you say, sometimes things that you've seen or done that helped you to understand that, by bringing that to them, it helps them to understand.
No, I definitely think it does, but it really did surprise me. Or maybe it was just my own, you know, not even contemplating that would have been something that they had no awareness of, and it really caught me unawares when I was in the classroom in the middle of my lesson. It was probably one of those going off on a massive tangent moments. Anyway, and I just went on one of those tangents now.
Just thinking that. Well, we are both teachers. It's an occupational hazard.
100%. So now that the world is starting to open up again, how much of an impact did COVID have for you and your travel plans?
I mean, it stopped us from going home last year, because I think we were just trying to be sensible and avoid the hassle. As odd as this might sound, or I don't know, maybe it's just ironic, I actually really don't like flying. And I've obviously had to make my peace with it on a regular basis, but despite being a physics teacher and, you know, somewhat understanding how it all works, it does terrify me. I'm much better than I used to be, but I basically get onto every flight thinking, this is it, this is the one. I have to have a word with myself sometimes. It's just, and I normally, you know, just say, well, how would I get to where I want to go? I really want to go to this place. How else can I get there? I can't get there anywhere else, so I'm going to have to get on this plane. I have to be quite sort of like pragmatic about it. But so in some ways, having an enforced year off traveling, part of my brain, the part that's not happy with flying, was a bit like, yay, we didn't have to worry about that for a year. But yeah, it was tough. It was tough not going home. We lost my granddad last year, and that was an awful time. And just, you know, you just miss out on so much. Like I did get home this summer, and, you know, my nieces and nephews are all like almost unrecognizable, because obviously kids grow like crazy when they're young, and you miss out on a lot. And as much as, you know, Zoom and WhatsApp calls, when we can do them and things like that, as much as they, you know, fill some of the hole, they don't go come even close to the experience of just, you know, being there. And, you know, I'm very close with my sister, and, you know, did really miss her terribly, just, you know, spending time together. So it has been really tough. But we were able to go this summer. We had to go via Malta, which is interesting, although that was a new country. So I was, you know, it can't be a bad life when you're forced to go on holiday to Malta. Just like, oh no, we're going to have to go to Malta. And it was amazing. And it did, it kind of like reignited that sort of travel bug in me. I was like, oh yeah, I remember like how amazing this is, and I want to do more of this. So I'm going to Georgia in half term this year. That's another new one. So
okay,
fab. try and get to 60 by, I don't know, maybe next year.
I was going to say, so what is your actual number at the moment?
I don't know, to be honest, because I've had arguments with several people over several years about what classes as a country. So it depends on whose definition you go. And I've kind of stopped thinking about that. And I can't remember where I landed in that discussion. So
it's somewhere between that. I think the family scratches are going to be on your map, and then you'll know. You might even be over 60.
Yeah, or hopefully we'll be soon.
I'm going to just switch on a little bit and move across to just thinking about life as an international teacher. We've touched on a few of these things, and it is a topic that I like to come back to on this show because it's something that I feel so passionately about. What would you say the positives and negatives of being an international teacher are?
I mean, obviously, I'm going to say traveling is a big positive. And like I say, it's not for everybody, and it's definitely something where, to me, you get out of it what you're willing to put in. I know people in Kuwait, you know, stayed in their apartments all the time and didn't get involved in any of the expat life, and that was, you know, fine. They had their reasons, but you've got to kind of be prepared to go out there and meet people and do new things. If you really, really want to get the most out of it. And one of the big positives, I think, of international travel is that there's so many opportunities to do that. There's always somebody that's be like, yeah, right, yeah, I'll go to, I don't know, lawn mowing club, or yeah, right, I'll learn how to play the piano, or yeah, right, I'll jump out of a plane with you. There's always some other maniac that's like, yeah, let's do this. And and that's to me is amazing. Because again, people tend to have that quality where they're willing to try new things and do something different. So you always meet people that are willing to fulfill your madcap ideas with you. So that's a definite positive. All the opportunities to travel, like I say, the disposable income means that you can generally have a better lifestyle here than you can back home. That's you know, that is important, I think. And then, I mean, I've also met the love of my life, so that's, I suppose I should put that in the positive column, even though he's not listening tonight.
He'll listen back and you will hear that. That was lovely.
Well, I'll insist. but yeah, so it's, you know, it's all of that. There's been some tough times, but I have never, ever regretted doing it. And I've never looked back, and I've had, you know, if the next plane is the plane, I've had a wonderful, wonderful life through living overseas, and so many cherished memories, so many amazing things that I've done. No regrets. But like I said, the negatives, it's definitely not for everybody. You know, it doesn't make everybody happy. You've got to have the right sort of personality. You've got to be willing to go out there and sort of try new things. And, you know, obviously the big ones, being away from your family and missing home. It is tough at times. And if there's now with COVID as well, there's always that, and as you know, everybody gets older, as we all tend to do, there's always that fear in the back of your mind, like, what if something goes wrong? What if something happens to somebody and I can't get home quick, or I can't get home in time? Sorry, that was the cat again. You know, what if the worst happens and I'm not there? And, you know, there's always those things that you're missing that you're not a part of, because you're out here living your own life. So that is definitely a downside. I've never really missed creature comforts or anything. In Kuwait, it was different because we couldn't get alcohol and we couldn't get pork. So I did miss those things then, and that probably would have been in my negative column. But I've never not really been fussed about, you know, not having the right cornflakes or the right cup of tea or whatever. But some people do miss those things. That's not to say that I don't like eat a load of Percy pigs when I get home, though. Obviously, well, I do.
I think that's been my thing. I've been able to kind of rely on people who have managed to get back. I don't know how Percy pigs going, but you are right. I mean, we're very lucky here. We get the majority of stuff that we actually.
Yeah.
It does feel.
It would miss, yeah.
I mean, Dubai in particular, in the UAE, does feel particularly Western. I have said this before on the show, you know, people who might be thinking about it or looking into it. I mean, yes, okay, it is 7 hours on an aeroplane, but I mean, when you get here, the culture is very, very Western. It's very, very tolerant of a lot of things. And, you know, I do think that it's a kind of a good place to start if you are looking at an international career, because I do think it really bridges that gap, to be honest, because the merging of the culture, the word I'm going back to is tolerant, I guess.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to live here, I think. There's still, you know, differences in the way things are done here than there are in the UK. And so sometimes that can be a source of frustration. But then you just have to remember, well, it's not my country, and that's, you know, it's not my place to say, like, how things are done. And it's not as frustrating here as it was in Kuwait. There was some big frustrations there. So, yeah, this is definitely a good stepping stone.
Definitely. Like, in terms of starting points, I mean, it has made me think, oh, okay, I did it in Dubai. Where could I go next? And that in itself is quite an exciting prospect, because I never really even considered that when I first started looking at teaching internationally. So, you know, it definitely does. I think if it is for you, I think it definitely raises your confidence in what you actually think you're capable of or could do next.
Definitely.
What advice, Emily, would you give to an international teacher who wants to start traveling more now that we can?
Just book it. Just go. you know, when's your next holiday? And then stick a bit of it. I was just trying to think of what approach I took. My priority was always somewhere I haven't been before. Sometimes I used to look at places where it was easy to get to other places from. It depends. If you're really just trying to rack up the countries, then, which I don't actually think is the right thing to do, you should have some time there and see as much as you can. But yeah, I would always recommend not going for the obvious ones. I think people come here and think, you know, the Seychelles or the Maldives or maybe Zanzibar, like the really kind of, you know, amazing beauty spots where you can have like a really fantastic beach holiday and somewhere which is perhaps, you know, more affordable from here than it would be from back home.
Mm-hmm.
But I always tended to try and go for the countries where, you know, people would raise an eyebrow maybe if I said, oh yeah, I'm off to Ethiopia. Like, oh, you know, it's not for everybody, but those are the places that you see the most amazing things and the most amazing people. So I think, you know, don't be afraid to try, you know, some countries that, you know, people back home might be a little bit worried about you going there, because you do have some amazing experiences.
See, before it all shut down, my approach was actually the opposite. And mine was, okay, I've come to Dubai, I've got to go to the Maldives.
Yeah, I know, as I was saying that, I was thinking, I know, that's why you've been there. I haven't been, so I can't comment. And it's, yeah, I still haven't been there. Because, like, I mean, people went from Kuwait, but I was always, I don't want to go anywhere that's, you know, just, I guess where I feel like it's an experience that could perhaps be repeated elsewhere. And maybe, as I say, after having been to the Maldives, you'll say, we'll know that it's a once in a lifetime place. But there's some places that I've been where I think, you know, this is the only place on earth where you see this.
Yeah.
And where it is, the other thing I was like, now when I'm young or when I was young, definitely getting older, I was more willing to sort of go to the more adventurous places that required a bit more stamina and a bit, you know, a bit, like I say, just to being a bit younger. Like, I feel like the Maldives you could do at any age, whereas climbing Kilimanjaro, maybe that's something that's, you know, going to be more enjoyable when you're a bit younger. So I also took that approach. I was like, get all the hard ones out the way and then I can go on cruises when I'm older.
Well, you see, I remember when I booked the Maldives, I was still very much in the mindset that I didn't know if I was going to do more than 2 years in Dubai. And I was like, I did Sri Lanka in the Christmas and then I did the Maldives at the Easter. And I was like, right, I was just literally going everywhere that I could.
Yeah.
And then and then that was it. Travel was pretty much done after that. And it was like, oh, well, I had a good run. It was working out okay while I was
going. It's opening up, so you should be thinking about where you're going next as well.
Don't even. The list is growing. Honestly, I'm a little bit like, I've got very itchy feet. I think as well, because I stayed here this summer, I'm desperate now to get away.
Yeah, to go somewhere new.
Go and do some adventures.
I've got a ton of places I can recommend. You've got to do what's comfortable with you as well. Like, don't go to Ethiopia if that's like your idea of the worst nightmare. Like, you know, heat and sweat and dirt and stuff, no AC for days. If that sounds like living hell to you, then don't go there because you're not going to enjoy yourself. But if that doesn't put you off, then I think it's worth going to places like that for the things that you can see.
For anyone who's just listening, Emily very clearly knows me.
I know, I was just thinking, like, just imagine when you were thinking, like, no.
Yeah. For me, number one on my list is South Africa. There's just everything that I could possibly
I have been there, and it is amazing.
Yeah, everything I could possibly want to do in one trip, I think, is pretty much in that one country. So I think that will be me next, going and having a big
adventure. It is really good. We stayed in an Airbnb when I went and, like, hired a car. It's really easy to like, travel about there and stuff. So it is good.
That's the other thing. Just as much as we say, you know, do your research when you're moving abroad, do your research when you're traveling. Look at the areas that you want to go.
Yeah.
Think about how easily they link with each other. Think about, you know, is it going to be an Airbnb or how you are going to, and where you're going to stay and how you're going to get to different places.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that is something where for some reason I didn't do it when I moved abroad, but when I go traveling, I do extensive research, talk to people who've been there, you know, find out where's safe and stuff, look on websites and the like Lonely Planet guides, that kind of thing. Just, you know, make sure you check everything out before you go.
A lot of the traveling that you've done and a lot of adventures you've had, you've done them solo. How's that been? Because for a lot of people that would be incredibly daunting.
To be honest, most of the places I've been, I've usually gone with friends that I've met, you know, living overseas. I did go to Nepal by myself, and I've had like bits of time when I've been on my own in traveling. It's fine. I mean, I just think, you know, you hear these stories in the news, you know, and there's always terrible things that happen all over the world. And I don't think that you're lucky if you know, nothing goes wrong. I just think you're unlucky if something does go wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think very few people are unlucky. So most people, it's going to sound like the UK government travel advice website now, most people travel without any issues. There's no problems or anything. So I think, yeah, it's, you do sort of, I guess you get sort of wise to a few things. You learn like a few tricks and stuff. You learn not to say yes to the first offer of a taxi or the first price that they give you. You know, you learn to keep your money in a safe place and have backup plans and stuff. But I mean, maybe I am lucky, I don't know. But I've always found that, you know, you just tend to get by. Like if you get dropped off somewhere and you're not sure where you are, there's always somebody there there's always other travellers or locals that are super friendly. As long as you've got a smile and you've got sort of an open attitude, people will help you. And like I said, the vast majority of people are just like us, and they're just nice, decent people that will help you out. So I think you've got to trust your gut a little bit as well. So if something feels off, then avoid it, especially if it's food.
That's some really great advice for anybody who is listening. I have to play the adverts one more time, so I'm going to do that now, and then when we come back we're going to just talk a little bit more about any advice we give to people thinking about international teaching and a few more questions about travel. So Emily, thank you so much for joining me today, and we will be back after this.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programs to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Do you struggle with people pleasing? Is it a constant battle managing different and difficult personalities? Why not inspire, challenge, and empower your team through the MAL CPD Essential Coaching Skills for School Leaders course, or gain practical skills to become a strong and compassionate leader through the Assertive Leadership and the Emotionally Intelligent Leader courses. All MAL CPD courses are accredited by the Institute of Leadership and Management. Find out more at www.malcpd.com. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Okay, and welcome back to the last part of Monday's Drive Home Show with me, Rebecca Ricketts, coming to you from Dubai, where I've been joined this afternoon. I say afternoon, it feels so weird, where I've been joined this afternoon, but for me it's evening, with Emily Fair, a fellow international teacher living in Dubai, who's been sharing all of her experiences about teaching internationally and using that as a platform to travel to as many places as she possibly can. So Emily, again, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon / evening.
No problem.
So just as we come into the last part of the show today, we have talked a little bit about teaching internationally, but as somebody who, did you say this is your 8th year? I just wondered what advice...
8th year internationally.
Yeah, what advice you would give to somebody who would be considering a move to international teaching?
Well, as I said before, I would advise doing research, even though that's not what I did. I do think it's good to have an idea of the country that you move into, local customs, you know, just how things work there. If you can, speak to expats that live there or have lived there. There's usually forums. I mean, it's you know, Facebook has got so many groups and things for somewhere like Dubai. I'm sure it's the same in other countries. So you can just join and ask questions and get a feel for what it's like, how easy it is. And then, yeah, just take the plunge, like, you know, sort of make sure everything's sorted back home. Set yourself, you know, I'll just do it for 2 years or whatever, and then be prepared to not come back for 10 or more. But yeah, just go for it and yeah, be prepared to have an amazing time.
I like that. Be prepared to have an amazing time. And you're right, I think it's about being open, isn't it? And it's about being flexible. And like you say, you might get here and do 1 year, or you might get abroad and you end up doing 10 plus. I think the thing that really surprised me when I moved here was meeting the lifers, you know, the people who were like 20, 25, yeah, 30 years into a life in Dubai. And I just, that was just something that never even crossed my mind until I moved here, that people would actually be there for that long.
I know, it was the same in Kuwait, you know, and it, like, it'd be a running joke, you know, people saying, oh yeah, I just got one more year, and I've been saying that for the last 10 years kind of thing. So yeah, it's just it's just if it's for you, you'll know, I think, pretty quickly that it's for you, and you'll just stay or go somewhere else and stay abroad for as long as you can.
There is a question that's just come into the chat from Lauren, and
hi, she's Lauren.
Asking you, Emily, how long did you plan to teach abroad?
Well, I don't know. I mean, at the moment, let's just say I've got no plans to go back to the UK. I see that my sister joined as well. She's not going to be very happy to hear that. Sorry, Laura. No plans for now. To be honest, until recently, I would have said I never planned to go back. You know, I don't want to live in the UK again. I love visiting, but it's not for me.
No, I'm the same.
More since COVID, and I think, you know, with the difficulties getting back, that has kind of made me waver slightly and made me think, oh God, you know, like family and stuff. And as I say, everybody's getting older and I'm getting older. And it does make you think. That's not to say that I'm sold on it, but it doesn't feel as impossible now as it once did.
Okay.
However, definitely no plans in the near future. I don't know. I think a more interesting question, not to say that your question wasn't interesting, Lauren, but would be, do I plan to ever teach in another country? Because I'm not sure about that one. I'm happy here in Dubai for now. I think Ben, my fiance, is happy here. So we've just moved into this wonderful house that I never want to leave. So I think for now we'll stay in Dubai, but I wouldn't rule out somewhere else, maybe somewhere closer to home, somewhere in Europe, or even somewhere further away. Like, I've always loved the idea of going to Vietnam. So, but that's the thing. I mean, that's coming back to what the positives. It's that you often feel like anything is possible. Like, oh, I could just go and live in Vietnam next year, or I could go and, you know, move to France, or I could go and, you know, do a few years in the States or South America, or just wherever I feel like it. Once you get on the international teaching circuit, you realize that, you know, within reason, that it's pretty easy to go just about anywhere. And so you do, and you can, kind of thing. So that's definitely a positive.
Agree. You know, I love it here in Dubai. And just like you, at the moment, I can't see myself leaving. But at the same time, I can also not commit myself to staying, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like last year, looking for a job, I was looking all over because I just thought, well, I've got this far. What's another 5-6 hours on a plane in the other direction? It just,
yeah,
that we keep, yeah, saying, oh, it just opens the world up in a completely different manner that it had never even occurred to me or I'd ever really appreciated before. All of my travel prior to this was Europe, America, you know, it was all that side of the world. And that was another reason why the Middle East was just so attractive to me, because it opened up, yeah, like we say, a completely different, the other half of the world that I'd never even seen before. So I think you're right. I think it is an interesting question. I'm definitely leaning towards the can't ever see myself teaching in the UK again. Can't really see myself living there.
Yeah, that one's a definite no. I wouldn't teach back in the UK.
Which, you know,
sorry to all the UK listeners.
No, because I think for anybody that's listening, it's really important to know, and it's a point that I've raised quite a lot on this show during the weeks, is that, and what really frustrates me is that international teaching is seen as a cop-out. It's not a cop-out. It is hard work. We work incredibly long hours. You know, the holidays are now getting pinched on either side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a cop-out of a job, but there is just something about the work-life balance and personal well-being. Yeah. That
a lifestyle, yeah.
100% that, you know, offsets what my friends who teach in the UK tell me, what my memories of teaching in the UK were. So it is hard work out here, but at the same time, I would take a day here over a day there anyway.
Definitely, yeah. It definitely, it feels, I mean, I know I said it, you know, it's starting to feel like home and stuff, but there is always like an element of it where, you know, you're still aware that you're not in your home country, that you're living abroad. So that, I think that gives it like a nice kind of shine to it, that it's something new and different. Even if you've been doing it for a long time, it's still different from your normal that you had growing up. And the years that you did back home. So at least that's how it's always felt to me. And if I ever get to the point in a place where I stop feeling that way, then I think, well, then I'll just go to another country.
100%. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think there are moments sometimes where you just kind of forget, and then all of a sudden you get a message from a friend at home and they say, were you seriously doing that at the weekend? Or you're seriously there? Like, and you think, oh my gosh, actually, yeah, I was. You know, and it kind of puts that perspective back on it a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's like seeing your life through the eyes of other people often reminds you of how incredible it is, and how incredible it can be, and having all these opportunities that you wouldn't necessarily have back home. But I mean, as I've said, it's not for everybody, and some people are obviously very happy living and teaching, or, you know, living in the UK, and not to take anything away from that. But if there's like a little kernel of in your brain sitting there listening, thinking, oh, maybe it would be for me, then I would say definitely try it.
I would 100% agree with that sentiment. I think give it a go, and, you know, the worst thing that can happen is you go back home again.
Yeah.
We are very quickly coming towards the end of today's show. Emily, you've been such an amazing guest. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been so lovely to talk about, especially being 4 weeks into the school term. It's really nice to think about travel and think about holidays and think about having a good and not.
That's why we do it. We're always on the countdown.
Oh, I know, definitely. Although it was a bit of a shock, like I said earlier, when my mum messaged me today and said, it's 4 weeks today and I'll be at the airport. I was thinking, oh my goodness, I'm actually not ready for it to be half term.
I've got too much to do.
Oh my goodness. So you mentioned in half term you are going to Georgia. So that is the next place on your travel list. Aside from the fact that it is close to us, what was it that appealed to you about going there?
It's I've always heard it's one that's been, you know, always on the lips of people that have lived in the Middle East. It's a definite must go and see it. So, and I mean, really need to stop talking about money, but it's very affordable from here. Flights are very reasonable, and it's very sort of reasonably priced, the activities and the place, you know, hotels and stuff, and food and drink is very, very, I don't want to say cheap, but it's very affordable. So that was definitely a factor, because moving house here is very expensive. So didn't want to go to the Maldives. Can't afford the Maldives. But yeah, so that's why. But haven't been there. Very excited to go. This, I mean, we went to Malta, as I said, in the summer, which was a new country. But this feels like kind of like what you used to do when, you know, just like it's half term, let's go somewhere different. So I'm excited to get back to that. And can't wait. 4 weeks and counting.
I think what you said though, that point about, you know, the not talking about money thing, I actually think that is actually quite important, because And that is something to take into consideration. Again, for anybody listening thinking that they might be tempted to come and live and work in the Middle East, the travel is actually quite a lot more affordable, especially to go to countries in the, you know, the vicinity. I haven't even been to I've been to the airport in Oman, but I've never actually even explored Oman, and that's like 2 hours away by car on the border. I mean, as soon as that opens up, I think that's probably number one on my list, just to say that I've at least been and not just sat in the airport.
Oman's beautiful. Definitely recommend going there. And you know, I think you could drive it.
Which would be funny. So, you know, and you know what, Emily, for you, you could go and have just a quick trip back to Oman so you didn't have to go on an aeroplane.
That's, yeah, I have been thinking about it, especially as live a bit closer to it now. So it's probably only, yeah, like you say, a few hours. Yeah, I've been there a few times, actually. My uncle that lived in Saudi did also live there for a while, and I went to see him. And it's a beautiful country. So definitely.
Another one of the Teacher Talk radio hosts, she presents from Oman, so it definitely comes very recommended from people on the Teachers Talk Radio team. So, yeah, another country in the Middle East that definitely gets rave reviews from people here. Emily, I'm going to have to say thank you so, so much, as we are really running out of time. You've been an amazing guest today. Thank you so much for joining me to
talk. Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
And hopefully we can get you back again in a few weeks and hear about some of your updated adventures.
No problem.
So thank you so much to Emily for joining me today. I think one of the things that I'm going to take away from what Emily said today was when she said the further you go from your own culture, the more you realize that ultimately we are all the same. And I think if you're going to take any message away from today's show, I think that's probably the most inspiring one. Emily was talking to us today, having visited nearly 60 different countries while she's been teaching internationally for the last 8 years. And again, like I always say, the benefits, positives, the absolute perks of living abroad are those cultural experiences. So for anybody listening and you are on the fence, please seriously think about it, especially now that the world is opening up, about the infinite amount of opportunities that you can have for traveling and seeing life just through a very different perspective. And so as we come towards the end of today's show, I'm just going to very quickly give you a heads up about what's coming with me in the next few weeks. I'm going to be back talking about a couple of my huge teaching and learning passions, including reading, promoting a positive reading culture. I've got some really exciting guests lined up in a few weeks, people who I really admire, who talk very freely on Twitter, primary school teachers, secondary school staff, looking at how we can build those positive and exciting reading cultures in our schools. Again, as I've mentioned before, this is a really exciting time for me and something that's really pertinent, as I am now creating my own reading culture, my own reading spaces in my brand new school. So please join me in the next few weeks as we take the conversation back to reading, taking it back to teaching English. And in the meantime, I will be keeping you updated with all the information with what's going on with debating and with oracy and all the other key focuses that are coming through as I develop my new role. So thank you so much once again for joining me today. And if you are listening back on the app, thank you so much for downloading. And I will speak to you again same time next week. Have a wonderful week, everybody.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.